It was intended for the human to support the machine to support the human at work.
And AI means something different to anybody you talk to, which is wild.
This is AI or Die.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to AI or Die, episode 22. It's beautiful outside. It's March. Good to see you guys again. Reagan and I are in person in the same room. Brendan, as usual, is calling in. Brendan, how you doing, man? What's new? What's top of mind?
Doing good. Just hanging out in Barcelona, per usual. Yep. A little bit of rainy day here, though. You know, I like talking about the weather, so it's a rainy day.
Got to open with the weather. Today's episode, we're going to have Nan Lee join in just a bit. She's doing a ton of work out there in terms of workforce readiness, and we're going to talk through some of the AI personas in large enterprises. There's also a lot of interesting news happening out there just in the past month. A lot of consolidation of some of these big players in this space to prep for Agentic 2 that we'll go through. But that's all coming. Quick update for myself personally. I have a mustache that was probably on the last episode, but it's still going strong. It's not AI. This is a real thing. And I am still in the midst of a weight loss competition, but I'm getting compliments more and more, which is really, really helping my motivation on this stuff. That's personal life. Work-wise, ton of really good stuff going on with Align AI. We're onboarding hundreds of users, which is really, really exciting. A ton of work from the dev team, a ton of work from Brendan as well. So it's just really exciting. Lots of growth, lots of really, really good stuff that we're working on with these enterprise customers. Reagan, what's new in your life?
Oh, not a ton. Just trying to schedule a little trip in April with my husband, trying to get a little bit of time away. It's been full throttle since January.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, truly, we've been just all at 150% capacity. It's exciting, though.
It's good stuff. Yeah.
As you mentioned, like we, you know, last year we doubled our revenue and sales from the year prior. This quarter, we're already coming out of the gate swinging, and it's a fun time. It's a lot, but it's a fun time.
Yeah.
We moved into a new office space. That's exciting. Just trying to get a little bit of R&R so we can keep the momentum up.
There's a poem that we hang in our office called Don't Quit, which is resonating extra strong lately. And I didn't know that it was a poem that other people had heard of. It's literally on a poster with ocean and sunset. But it sounds like you guys talked to some folks who had mentioned it also in the past week, which is kind of funny.
It's
kind of serendipitous. Yeah.
It's a theme. Don't quit.
Don't quit. Gosh, I can't believe we're already almost near the end of quarter one of the year, just looking at the calendar. But that is what's going on in our lives. Now let's get into the news. First one, this is a fun one. I want to open up with this one. The first real-world multi-site study for Gen AI-powered mental health. So this is a first public study of its kind, really looking at how can Gen AI support care for folks. This was in the UK. It came out just about a week ago. All about looking at how can they drive greater clinical outcomes in terms of standard of care for folks. So metrics like, are they actually attending sessions? Are they dropping out of this? Is there recovery rates that are going on? And with this, what they want to do is conduct a public study of 100 or so folks, so not a massive sample size, but look at how can Gen AI in supplement with in-person sessions actually improve outcomes. It's called Limbic Cares Gen AI, and it's really interesting because they found that session attendance increased by 42%. They found that dropout rates decreased by 23%. Recovery rates were improved by 25%. And then overall, they estimated something in a couple hundred dollars of value per patient based on improved recovery rates alone. Mm-hmm. So really interesting public study starting to come out that it was a bit of a good news story in terms of Gen AI supporting folks' mental health and really how humans engage more and more with conversations like this with Gen AI. We're seeing that too with a lot of stories talking about people building a bit of a relationship with Gen AI. Brendan, I know this is right up your alley. What are some of your kind of initial reactions to studies like this?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because I remember talking to someone that was doing a mental health startup when AI was, you know, booming, right? And they were talking about just like how this is kind of the early days of ChatGPT where I was like, oh, like that will never go into clinical care. Like that's like way too dangerous, right? And now to see that already have changed, like in the course of what, 2 years, I think since those conversations were happening, where people are kind of opening up the frontiers of like what people will trust AI with. I do think there's obviously probably a million guardrails built into like what they're doing or a lot of safety protocols, of course, anything related to mental health. But it's cool to see that there's traction there. I can also, like, being familiar with cognitive behavioral therapy, you see how those exercises would be a great use case. I haven't played too much with mental health stuff, but I have been using like a journaling kind of Gen AI experience. It's very interesting just because it is so much more interactive than a lot of the traditional experiences you would see there. So it's, you know, tangential, but I think it would be interesting to see like how these new products come out and people become more reliant on them or more trusting of more of an AI powered experience. Also just love that they benchmarked against the normal type of care and like did a side-by-side comparison rather than just kind of like a in a vacuum comparison. So it's really good to see kind of like that A/B side-by-side comparison to the traditional care.
Yeah, I know we talked about on the last episode with Mike Alvarez when we were talking about agents, we were talking about frameworks and how we believe that a lot of these agentic systems or general kind of like generative AI systems can follow, you know, very not rigid, but specific frameworks to go against. So it's not so open-ended, right? Like when we all operate, even with building startups, there are tons and tons and tons of frameworks and best practices and ways of running that. Like there's been several books, right? The Lean Startup, Zero to One, they all talk about these methodologies that you follow and you shouldn't do it rigidly, but you know, you still need room for expanding beyond that. But what's interesting is like mental health kind of has that too, right? When you are formally or professionally trained as a therapist, you are trained on specific frameworks and tools that you can leverage and teach your, you know, clients. And if we can leverage that, which I assume they did, right? And be able to kind of guide the AI in that direction, it gives maybe a little bit less open-endedness and less kind of scaries around what it does and what it doesn't do and how it behaves. And, you know, we still need to give these things guidelines, not just like letting them go off the rails and be super creative to do wild stuff,
right?
You know?
Right.
So, you know, I was even at a conference in San Francisco last week and we were talking about this concept between, you know, agentic systems and truly autonomous agents. And they were parallelizing that to the autonomous vehicle space and how there's different levels of autonomy that you reach. And with agents, a lot of people are saying, well, these agentic workflows are really rigid, right? Because they're basically predetermined workflows that leverage LLMs. And most people are saying, well, a truly autonomous agent does its own planning, reasoning, and plotting of its kind of path. So when I think about things like this, where it's actually really important for it to stay the course, I think that's okay. Like, I think that we can be a little bit more rigid in how we design these systems. And then we end up getting the ability to support more risky use cases like this.
Because the goal of this being elevate the standard of care. And what continues to surprise me is this is highly sensitive information, very personal stuff that people are sharing with this Gen AI solution. And I find that so interesting is I just think people's tolerance for sharing that type of sensitive information with a Gen AI. And I wonder if they may be more comfortable sharing it with a solution like that, as opposed to a human person face to face. I just find that so interesting, the level of care and how people are comfortable with sharing certain information with different entry points like that.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Good stuff. So that's a good news story to start. I'm going to flip over to the next one. We talked about this a lot last year, but starting to see a lot of these big enterprise solution providers merging together. So big one being Palantir and Databricks announcing a strategic partnership in the near term to really help deliver secure and efficient AI to customers in that way. Might have been something that we saw coming. We're huge fans of Palantir here at Align AI, but I think their partnership with Databricks is really to help provide a more centralized place for a lot of organizations just to leverage.
Yeah, Databricks is dominating.
Yeah, they're crushing.
I mean, like, we had tons and tons of conversations last year at a similar conference about Databricks versus Snowflake and how Snowflake kind of won the BI game, but Databricks really won over the machine learning engineers and data scientists, and now they're expanding into the warehouse ecosystem too. So partnership to me makes a lot of sense.
Yep. I think we'll see more of it as well too. I'm just surprised with these two big players coming together as well. Another one just related is also UiPath. Really focusing on more of the agentic side of things and partnering with Peak AI in that space too.
Yeah. I was just talking about how RPA, a lot of RPA teams are getting kind of repurposed to be AI teams because UiPath is, of course, going to leverage LLMs in those workflows.
Yep.
Why wouldn't they? It creates kind of a more dynamic ecosystem for people to build. And at the end of the day, these are all kind of, at least for the automation use cases, it makes complete sense why they would want to move into the agentic space.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see how this plays out because we're working with a client now, and like that's come up in conversation is they have the RPA automation team, and then they have the more traditional like data science teams. And to me, it's just really interesting because data science is similar to what you do in Gen AI, but RPA is also there, and then data engineering is also there. So I think I'm curious if it'll turn into like what type of systems are being built determines which team they go to. Like the more complex ones going to data science teams, so they can provide more statistical rigor around performance understanding, whereas a simpler task would go to an RPA team. I'm just really kind of interested to see how that organizational structure builds up around agentic, because the RPA team would own like the tools that the agent would call, but then there's also like the data that needs to flow in to be enriched, and there's also like the statistical piece of kind of teaching it and doing the feedback loops and things like that. So I'm really curious to see how those structures and these cross-functional teams kind of come together, especially inside the enterprise clients we work with.
Because what we're seeing pretty consistently is those enterprises don't want to burden the business end users with trying to define whether this is an agentic solution that they need or whether this is an automation solution that they need or a traditional ML solution that they need. Come with the problems, and we as a central team will help to figure out how this makes up different pointed solutions that come together to serve the business at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think we've seen this huge evolution, at least this year, away from these like open-ended co-pilot type of tools that are quite frankly very hard to quantify in terms of value, right? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, we know we're saving time. We know we're moving more efficiently, of course. So to me, it's almost like, do you buy email for your company? Like, yeah, you do, because it's helpful in terms of productivity. Now, how to quantify that is going to be really hard. And I think the co-pilot type tools are great, but it's not going to be the game changers for these enterprises. And they're getting a lot of pressure from their board to actually show ROI, as we all know.
Yep.
And the one way to do that, honestly, is through automation. And we've heard from several of our customers that they've been burned on this automation path before. Mm-hmm. RPA happened and then it fizzled. Mm-hmm. And then there was a lot of disappointment around it. Unfortunately. And to root cause that, you know, I can only speculate because I don't really work with a lot of RPA teams, to be honest, and I haven't. But I'm kind of speculating that the reason being is that the types of workflows that they could actually support in production probably weren't that impactful.
Yeah.
I mean, you did this at a previous role too.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, that's in line with what we've seen pretty consistently with OpEx in general, of like it has to align to critical workflows, the data preparedness, and then also the value estimation. Mm-hmm. Those three are such fundamentals to any sort of change in the workflow, whether it's an agentic solution or something else. If you don't have clarified like what's the actual impact on the ground of the workflow and the tracking mechanism to show that value and actually drive an impact downstream to budgets at the end of the day, it's going to be really hard to prove its value and justify its existence.
And I wonder if complexity has been that blocker.
Yeah, and if I could throw a hot take.
Yeah,
please.
If agentic, the hunch is that agentic will have bigger returns than traditional Gen AI solutions, right? And then if we take that assumption where it needs to be in the more complex, more value adding, it's probably more customer centric or closer to the customers at least. And I think the risk profile there is not very conducive to these heavily autonomous agents. Like the agent workflow, like that kind of stuff, I think for sure, like a more structured, like human loop review process, at least to start, I think is solid. But I think it's a little bit unwise to pursue agentic out the gate in those kind of use cases. So it's going to have to build up to that, right? I think it's good to unlock the capabilities, but it's probably going to be more backup house, back office kind of situations, and then work forward to that front of the house big kind of wins. But I wonder if that's where agentic will face some steep uphill in the next 6 months to a year in the enterprise, at least.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at any company who's been wildly successful with AI and ML over the last decade, it's all been revenue generating customer facing use cases.
Yeah.
Like think, you know, your Netflixes, your or your Amazons, right? Like all of those things, yes, Amazon has a lot of logistical elements on the back end, but like the recommendation systems, the ability to recommend new products, all of that, like customer experience, customer facing components. I'm not specifically talking about Gen AI, by the way. I'm just saying more broadly, those have been the big winners because they've been able to drive more revenue and more market share because of the ability to acquire better, more customers and have higher retention for those customers.
Yeah.
And I think you're right, Brendan, like the big, big winners are going to be the ones that can can leverage this on the customer facing side. I don't think there's anything wrong though with trying to build the muscle on the internal facing stuff. I just think to your point, like companies should be setting expectations for themselves.
With the customer facing stuff too, I think there's an interesting kind of confluence of trends because the parallel path is also, there were studies that came out this month to say that 50% of Americans have engaged with some sort of AI chatbot now. So that population in terms of the customer base actually getting more comfortable using AI chat to solve their problems and work through those things. As more and more usage comes up, I wonder if that'll also impact the trust that these companies have with exposing a solution like that to their customer base.
You got to think of this too, like the ability to acquire customers is also a really strong suit in terms of actually acquiring customers. So not just the customer experience, but the sales and marketing capabilities to identify and acquire new customers. AI can be leveraged in all sorts of ways to do that too. I mean, we obviously saw the big boom of like algorithms from a paid marketing perspective in that first wave. Now there's opportunities obviously for hyper personalization, hyper personalized targeting, in addition to hyper personalizing your sales tactics.
Yep.
Whereas we were all used to doing these like really broad, inefficient sales tactics before, those can probably get more efficient as well.
Totally. Even with digital strategies that these companies had even 5 years ago, just to provide more options for customers to engage. Mm-hmm. And customers our generation and onwards not really wanting face-to-face or live things. They prefer some sort of chat interface deal.
Yeah, it always brings me back to this question of like, what's going to be the biggest barrier now? Because I feel like the system shifts a lot. So like, what's the constraint in the adoption? Like, is it the tech? Is it the data? Is it the user? And I feel like for some of these use cases, it's like, it's now the user and the data, which is very good, right? Those are the right constraints to move forward. I just keep seeing a lot of like the agentic videos where it like books a flight for you and emails somebody. And I just like, maybe I'm a Luddite, but I'm like, I'll never do that. Like I cannot get to that level, you know? But maybe that's something that will also, like you mentioned, like younger folks like to have this more autonomous kind of like, I don't need to talk to a person to order. Let me just get it done. I wonder if that will also shift in our expectations of how we interface with technology.
When it works for people consistently, I'd be willing to jump on board.
Because I think there's a mental dollar threshold. Like I wouldn't trust anything over a $20 thing being bought for me to have an agent completely handled.
It's not even about the money for me. It's about the kind of chaos it can create. Like I told you all, I won't name names, but I did try a service on the personal side. And it actually created so much chaos for me because it wasn't accurate. So that's a very, very, very frustrating experience. And when it's causing you more work and more headache and more oversight, it's like hiring somebody who has no idea what they're doing. And now you're doing their job twice as hard because you have to overlook everything that they're doing.
Yeah.
And I just think once the performance is at that point, there's literally no point in doing it, especially if it's agentic and it's actioning on your behalf. Mm-hmm. Like, no thanks.
And just one more story here, because Nan's going to join in just a few minutes, but more of these companies, even OpenAI this week, launching new tools to help businesses build AI agents. I'm so curious, back to internal enterprise operations, what those persona breakouts will start to be. Is the strategy that every single person in the enterprise is able to build agents? I don't think so.
No, there's no way.
I don't think there's a desire for it, nor do I think that would make things any easier because there'd be so much noise of things being built. So like, how does this start to adjust different job descriptions and roles between, and Nan will talk about this, AI builders versus AI users versus AI kind of protectors and stakeholders in that way too.
Yeah, the democratization movement's happening. That's a good thing. But I think it's what part of the process gets democratized, because we're going to run into the exact same problem that we did with dashboards, even worse that we did with dashboards, where they're like thousands of dashboards that nobody uses. and all of them say something different, and nobody can agree on what anything means or what the metrics are, or how they're calculated, and you lose complete trust in any of it because it's not governed appropriately and people are misusing it because they don't understand. And it's not their fault, but you know, there's a trade-off between speed and usefulness and accuracy. And I think we're going to run into the same problem, if not worse, with these AI systems, because they're not only going to be wrong, but we'll be unable to catch them and figure out where they're wrong and how they're wrong. And they'll be making actions on our behalf. And that's going to create some issue.
What is that like? My hunch is still like, you know, business helps define it, business helps design it, you know, all that. But there still needs to be some degree of technical person that is like troubleshooting it, managing it in production, making sure it's running the right way. So I think there'll be massive economies of scales on how to manage these things in production. But I love the democratization. I love the business being more directly involved, especially in the creation of these, because they have that domain knowledge. But I'm always just skeptical of like, okay, but this is now going to be an autonomous system that we need to take care of. It needs to react and evolve, and we need to make sure it's doing that correctly. So just how to make sure that that's going to be successful.
And for today's guest on episode 22, we have Nan Lee. Hi, Nan. Thank you so much for joining. I've known Nan for some time now. She's a friend of the show, a friend of Aligning Eye as well, too. I know you've had quite the career, Nan, especially across large enterprises, working in AI, working in data science. So we're really excited to have you on today's episode. Nan, just for our listeners who may not be familiar, would you mind sharing a bit more about yourself, your career background, what led to where you're at today?
Sure. Thank you for having me here. I would say my career really grew with the industry. I actually had my undergrad in biology. Then I got my MBA from Case Western. I started in marketing analytics or database marketing, right, when the industry started in analytics. Then I just grew with industry and moved from marketing analytics to data science. Mm-hmm. Then recently I led the AI machine learning and statistical practice nationwide, where mm-hmm. we design and develop and implement large enterprise-wide AI solutions for supporting various functions and nationwide. I'm also passionate about psychology and human AI interactions. I always mm-hmm. constantly think about how the advanced technology, right, improve our productivity, but how that will influence human behavior and change our society.
Yeah, and I know you've had tons of experience, and not only nationwide, as you mentioned, but also Bread Financial and Cardinal Health too. And I'm really excited just to talk to you, especially about workforce readiness for AI today, kind of that merge, like you said, of the psychology and the hard science of AI and getting people to adopt it and use it more as well too. On that note, I wanted to open up the topic of workforce readiness with you, especially related to AI. First, talking historically, because our listeners love to get just any experience and tactics just around how they should be thinking about AI and workforce readiness for AI in their organization. Just talking through your experience on that side of things, is there any key trends that you've seen across these large enterprises that you've worked at related to any sort of emerging tech? Let's focus on AI today, but any sort of cultural workforce readiness tactics that you've seen that have worked really well in your experience?
AI definitely is taking the world by storm, right? When ChatGPT was released a couple of years ago, I see the enterprise are taking full force embracing AI, and there's a lot of new development there. Number one field is in increasing productivity, but gradually we started thinking, it started shifting how we interact with each other, right? Mm. How we conduct our business. I can see there's three lanes. I published something on LinkedIn. There's the enterprise AI lanes, people trying to get the scalability. And in the enterprise, there's also a large group of individual users, small business consumers. They're leveraging AI, become a super business owner, a superhuman, because AI allow us to do a lot of more things more efficiently that we just actually don't have knowledge as. Now you have imagination. Then there's also a group of folks, they're not sure where to go. They feel the impact, but they struggle with where to go. In the enterprise, I will say there's a couple of things. There's people, enterprise were embracing AI, trying to integrate in all their processes, and particularly in the technology space, because they're technology native, I can say technology AI is their business, right? You see a lot of interest and investment in that area. Then we see traditional business. They stay in their lane, but they try to integrate the AI to improve their productivity, improve their product or service, and stands out in the marketplace, maybe offer new benefits to their target customer, to the consumer that wasn't available before. And then, and most, I think the advanced one is in the healthcare, in the medical field, right? Drug discovery or reading the images, much more efficient than we were able to do before.
Yeah, just before you joined, we were talking a lot on this episode about the enterprise willingness to expose AI solutions to customer-facing use cases as opposed to just internal-facing use cases as well, too. How have you seen that evolution just over the past years of working in these large enterprises and partnering with them, too? Have you seen more of a change to a willingness to make more customer-facing AI solutions, or do you still see a lot of bias towards internal operations as the focus there?
It depends on your definition of AI. Right. If you think of AI as predictive modeling, we've been doing that for a long, long time, like you say. But actually, every day we're interacting with AI algorithm. Right now, we're living in the algorithm-driven society. If you open your LinkedIn, social media, whatever you see is controlled by AI. That's customer-facing. Mm-hmm. That's every day. If you think about, I've been in the financial services insurance for a long time, right? When you apply a loan. Right. There is algorithm predict model behind the scene. Hey, shall we approve that or not? So in that traditional AI space, it's everywhere already. Now, if we talk about newest, the generative AI space, are people still cautious? Because generative AI so far, it's so creative. It's not non-reproducible still right now. So you cannot get the same result every time. And it's based on the data fit into the model. I see most organizations still a little cautious. And I agree with that. I'm more focused on the back office operation, right? Get your employee more productive, focus on internal operation optimization before that they present to their front end consumer. Another side, I will say our regulation is still maturing. This is still new to the regulators. So we need, I think that when that space mature, people have more confidence, more trust. The company might be able to start move into the front. And what I can say, it's not just one type of AI, should be the composite AI, you know, integrating or combining all the best things from traditional AI and generative AI all together to give the customer the best experience.
Especially in the financial services and healthcare space, we hear a lot, and you and I have attended a couple talks where they talked a lot about like the operating model for supporting this. Like, have you seen any evolution in terms of how we're organizing teams inside of enterprises to support AI, Gen AI, but also some of these wider, even just automation aspects into one area to help provide more holistic solutions to the business at the end of the day?
And if I can add a second question onto that, if you're seeing it, how are you seeing the democratization of AI and participation of that beyond just those central AI teams? So what does that kind of trend look like too?
Yeah, definitely see changes. Before, like in predictive world, people, that's cool thing, let's get the PhDs, masters figure out in a group. Right now, Gen AI is completely changed the dynamic because it's in human language. Everybody can interact with the people feel, and executive, the first time the C-level, the board starting asking because they can feel and touch it. So I think attention and scrutiny right now is much higher than before, right? Before was, you know, we're in the Ivy Tower, we're in the enterprise analytic group. Now everybody have experience. There's more bottom up. One is people started asking, can I use it to improve my productivity, right? People are asking. Another thing is it's actually getting still complex. I would say the best operating model is it has to work with your organization, maturity, and culture. Even the generative AI wave, we've been here only year two or year three, but it takes years for the organization to develop their operating model and culture. That's not going to change over time. So I also best model is whatever works with your existing structure. And the algorithm I've seen is if the company has a centralized data science, AI, or technology group or innovation group, usually that group take a lead. They manage that what the platform, the tools, and security, then can enable more people to get access to it. I've also seen organization when they don't have centralized, they delegate or distribute the decision rights and also the operating model to individual business unit or product lines. So each BU and product line may have their analytic team or their AI team integrated in their business, and they focus on application, right, in the business domain. And also, we have to look at the risk profile and value, right? I'll say if it's low risk, right, small values, but it can be realized by many people, you should democratize that. Many people, company probably have implement Copilot, right? Even notes taking for meeting planning for, or even code generation. That's not like a several million dollar decision. It is a few dollar decision, but it impacts so many people. You want to democratize that. But I'll say for high stake, high value, high risk projects, you probably want to be managed by a centralized team who really understand intricacy, understand technical side of that, and working with cross-functional governance team to roll it out thoughtfully.
Yeah, I've seen so many companies struggle with this because it's like you get all of these requests and all of these people lined up to want to use these tools and they get impatient, and then you start getting kind of shadow IT or shadow AI throughout the organization. Then you increase your risk profile. There's some companies that are just so conservative about this and risk averse that they're forcing everyone to go through a centralized function, and people are impatient and they're annoyed, and all they want to do is use this tool. And so they go around their centralized team. And then there's the opposite side of that, where I've talked to some companies, even in regulated spaces, who have really just kind of let the reins go, but they're monitoring everything. So if there is anything that is happening that's high risk, they can address it pretty quickly. But you're not going to catch everything. You know, it just creates a really tough ecosystem. So have you seen something that works, like both speed and agility, but also the level of rigor for risk management?
I'll say coming back to the company, right? Your AI strategy have to match your business strategy. What works well is when they have a clear articulate what AI plays in their business strategy. Then they can clear articulate, say, what role will AI play in my organization? For example, I've seen, actually, it's not my own experience, but I've seen companies, I've seen a few drug companies, actually, they are embracing AI aggressively, but smoothly without even knowing that because it's part of their culture, right? They have innovating within your business unit. And people don't feel it's disruptive. They feel that's continuation, right? Advancement, what they've been doing so far. And also those use cases are closest to the stakeholders. So they can access the risk accordingly, and they have the accountability. Another thing I've seen good successful is organization, they have this hybrid model, hub spoke model. They have a centralized group. I talk about the technology stack is still a little complex, and you want the scalability, you want the standardization. So that group manage the, I'll say, overall the stack, the governance, the rollout, then you hand it over the actual the application with use cases to the, I'll say, whoever is accountable, who have a stake in it, and who really understand the cost benefits and risk of that, and enable them. It's like analytics. We used to centralize analytics. Now we can distribute them to the business because we want them to be closer to the value generating unit. I can see that happening in the future as AI matures over time.
I've said this a thousand times, actually. We said this on the episode before you joined. I was talking about the sometimes disaster of democratization of analytics that happens. Thousands of dashboards don't get used, all say different things. People lose trust. It's a problem. And, you know, there's really, really bad things that can happen if you do it in the wrong way. Like if you're not thoughtful about how you enable different parts of the business. And AI is so interesting because it is so specific to the, like, it needs to be as close to the value in the workflow as possible. It has to be. And we were just talking about how, like, very complex business processes can probably benefit the most from AI over time. But it takes tons and tons of data, nuance, and complexity and training to do that properly. And how do you do that? You need people who are domain experts who can assist in that process. And today, I unfortunately think that a lot of business folks and domain experts are being completely left out of the conversation. You know, they're completely off. Not being involved, and you've got these technical teams, not everywhere, but like you've got these technical teams who are just trying to build stuff that works and it falls short. And it's because they have no context into the complexity of the process they're trying to support. So I'm glad you brought that up because, like, a lot of the trends we saw with analytics and data, we're probably going to see with AI too.
I'll point out the one thing different analytics. Analytics almost on paper, right? You present that. AI is in action, right?
Yes,
I talk about
100%.
the AI actually change our processes, change our behaviors. It's beyond automation. Usually automation trying to automate it based on existing process. But AI is changing the process, changing people. You have to think of how re-engineering the process, how people interact with that. Right. I'll just give an example, actually. One of the use case I work on, people looking for AI-ready data. Right. Some of the data are messy. Say so when AI, we data ready, actually the quickest way to get it ready is change your data capture process. You can leverage AI to make your data ready. Then they're ready for AI model. Right? So it's a circle. So you decide, do you want to wait data ready so that you can deploy AI model, or you use AI to change your data capture process in the first place?
Absolutely. It's I'm so glad you I'm literally gonna snip that or have Angie snip what you just said and like put that all over as a clip because like I love what you just said. Like, I think so many people are talking about AI from this automation perspective as if companies are going to perfectly automate the existing process they have today. It's not, to your point, like it is actually going to fundamentally change the process itself, which is a good thing. And then we can kind of move faster and automate components within that. But like, it is an evolution of business process. It is not like, why would you want to automate a bad business process anyway? Nobody wants to do that.
And you talk about the maturity of the organization for this. I think it couples with the maturity of their operational excellence and their ability to understand the workflows and the impacts of that downstream to be able to plug in solutions like this. Yeah, for sure.
So great.
I know we're just coming up on time. I know, Nan, I want to make sure that folks have the ability to get in contact with you. I want to make sure to link your LinkedIn, but is there other ways that you'd like listeners to get in contact with you, or anything that you'd like to plug at the end of this episode today?
Sure. So I'll say LinkedIn is the best way to contact me. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. I actually sharing my thoughts because I think the AI revolution for everybody to adapt, actually changing mindset is most important, right? Once we change your mindset, you can find a thousand way of do things better. Following LinkedIn, another thing is to raise awareness and educate everyone, particularly actually the non-technical folks, business leaders, and particularly mid-career professions. They have no experience. They want to transition or find a better way to adapt in the AI revolution. I am launching a course on Maven. It's called AI
Very exciting.
Compass, the rule strategies for thriving in the AI age. It's not the technical ones. There's plenty of technical trainings out there you can find. My course is, that's why it's called a Compass, right? It's a because the endless technical training, but you want to know the long-lasting rules. Once you find that, you can navigate through the evolution with ease, with confidence, and you can find your new niche in the new era. So that's coming up on Maven. Actually, I'm going to partner with my good friends and industry trailblazer, Noelle Russell. She'll be my
Wow,
guest
love
speaker.
Noelle.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
So it'll coming up April 2nd, and
Great.
that's the first in a week in the second quarter. Hope everybody get it, make a new quarter resolution is enroll my course
So
and make it work.
this was episode 22, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to AI or Die, and we'll catch you on the next one. Thanks, everybody.